You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. Find us on Facebook and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
Our state, our fine folk, we love it here. You know, around here, Voices of Montana, we love it. Just almost embarrassingly so. So I'm really looking forward to today. I've talked about it here because every one of our families, every one of our communities, we're connected in a lot of ways. And a lot of that way that we find out we're connected is through competition. Yeah. And competition comes in a lot of forms, all right? You know, it's certainly academic competition, but we're talking about athletic competition. And if we can even say the greatest athletes from all of our communities, well, at least 264 of them, this will be fun. Jeff Welsh, author of Montana Greats, today here on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you. I hope you all are doing well. I appreciate you joining us here. Two decades strong, working on three, that objective perspective. As Eric said, it is from Montana for Montana. And I'm Tom Schultz. Let's just launch right into this. Jeff Welsh is in studio. He's the author of Montana Greats. This title specifically is From A to Z, From Absorkey to Zurich, The Greatest Athletes from 264 Montana Communities, executive sports editor for 406mtsports.com. But that's associated with Lee Newspapers, been a sports journalist for a lot of years. Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for being here.
Well, good morning, Tom. And I'm flattered to be here, especially knowing that this is usually open phones and you're reserving this for me in our conversation about the greatest athletes that Montana has produced, and there have been many.
Okay. Now, you do say it's Montana Greats, not Montana's greatest, but in the introduction and through, you do say it is the greatest athlete from these communities. But you say also several times over, let the debate begin. How what's the genesis of this book? And I'm sure you've heard from a lot of folk over the athletes in their town.
Well, I have. And, you know, the interesting thing about this is this whole idea of seeking out the greatest athlete from as many communities in Montana as I possibly could. We have 264. And if you put that in some context, Montana has, I think, roughly 150 communities with high schools. And so now, I've got 100 plus towns here that don't even have a high school.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, if you look at a Montana map, there are plenty of little dots that aren't represented here. So part of the, I think of this as a work in progress, hoping that readers will let me know who else is out there that we're missing. But as far as the genesis, this was completely unplanned. As the executive sports editor of 406 Sports, I live outside of Bozeman. I go to Helena, where we have the Independent Record, routinely. And if you ever drive Highway 287 between Three Forks and Helena, you know, just before you cross the Missouri River, there's a left turn that says Raidersburg 9. And I must have passed that 30 times before I said, you know what? I'm going to go down there and see what's there. And so one day I did. It's basically at the end of the paved road. And interestingly enough, I've been there four times now, and I don't think I've yet to see an adult in town. But you can tell by going to this little place that something happened there at some time. And it is a mining town that was thriving about a century ago. At any rate, I poked around a little bit, found out that they've got a history group there, a preservation group, and learned some remarkable things. One is that the great Hollywood actress Myrna Loy was born there and moved to L.A. to become an actress as a teenager.
Well, you called her the Queen of Hollywood.
The Queen of Hollywood. Yeah. I mean, she was in the business forever. The president, Ulysses S. Grant, came there on a stagecoach back during his term after the Civil War. There's a great story about two lawyers from that town who were captured in Yellowstone National Park 5 years after it was created by the Nez Perce Indians as they were trying to escape. But the thing that jumped out to me was that there was a fellow named Cecil Elba Larry Duff, who came up for what they would say a cup of coffee in the major leagues for baseball with the Chicago White Sox, barely longer than Moonlight Graham of Field of Dreams fame. And looked into him a little bit and just was sort of stunned that a fellow like this would be from this little place in Montana that barely exists anymore. And as I was driving away, I said, you know what? I'll bet there are a lot more stories like this across Montana. Started digging into this the next day, and this book that you're looking at now is the result of that.
So Larry Duff from Raidersburg, baseball. You also tell a story about you were into this book a little bit. You had this comes from Terry, Montana, and as you were collecting these stories, so to speak, you realize that there was a lot more work to be done, I suppose.
Well, that's true. I mean, my wife and I were out there, and we love eastern Montana, and we often vacation or camp out that way. And we had stopped in Terry just to do a bike ride down to the Yellowstone River. And when we were done, we were thirsty. We went to the Four Corners convenience store there, and we sat down with the owner, Leanne Lantis, wonderful woman, and her daughter, Layton, who's Billings. People might recognize her name as a basketball player at Billings West few years ago. At any rate, we were talking to them, and I still wasn't sure what I had with this project. And I thought, you know what? Listening to Leanne talk about her history, she had coached, she had played, she was a lifelong Terry person. I'm going to ask her about the greatest athlete from Terry, Montana. And I brought it up, and she hemmed and she hawed, and she came up with a couple of names. And that sounded pretty good. And I mentioned I had a name also, a player who had gone to Montana State to play football. But even this person who had been there forever, it was a challenge to immediately come up with a name. And as we're bantering back and forth, she all of a sudden stops and says, well, here comes the greatest Terry athlete of all now.
Bam.
And I look up, and here getting out of a pickup truck at the gas pumps at the convenience store is Lacey Haugian, who, yes, one of the great athletes from Terry, great basketball player, track athlete, Terry's only professional athlete. And so I thought, wow, what a stroke of good fortune. Struck up a conversation with her, learned a lot about her. But then all of a sudden it hit me. The only way that I'm really going to be able to do this right would be to go to every single town in Montana, sit at the convenience store with the nexus of the community, the person who knows everything, and hope that the greatest athlete shows up after buying gas.
That has a certain amount of charm to it, doesn't it?
A lot of charm to it. But I thought, man, this is even going to be more challenging than I thought.
So that brings up, to my mind, because it's not all about professional athletes.
No.
The guy from Brownie Burkey or from Marysville,
right,
comes to mind. He was 4'7". He wasn't much of an athlete, but he was the first native Montanan to make it. This, according to your book, onto a Major League Baseball field, albeit as a mascot.
Right,
a cool story.
Right, you know that's part of this is yes, it's find the greatest athlete, but also to have a little bit of fun with this, you know. And Marysville, another little formerly booming mining town northwest of Helena. Not, you know, again, not much there. It's similar to Raidersburg, actually. Great restaurant there. But this person jumped out at me. And so, you know, there was a way of coming up with the greatest athlete. And some of that was just the obvious. What kind of statistics did they have? How did they do in high school? But then it was, what did you do after high school? What did you do on the national and international stage? And even beyond that, there was a certain it factor involved and a certain fun factor. And so Brownie Burke was probably not a great athlete at 4'7", but here was a guy who had a major impact on the national sporting scene. I mean, he was sort of the spy for the manager and, as you say, the first Montanan to wear a Major League Baseball uniform. I'll give you one more example of sort of the thought process is the little southeastern Montana town of Ismay on the railroad down there. You know, there's a couple of excellent rodeo cowboys that come from there. But
yeah.
but a lot of people are still aware of the story where a Kansas City radio station was doing a publicity stunt, if you will, And at the time, they had a fairly decent quarterback named Joe Montana. And so they decided to come up with this idea of having a town in Montana renamed Joe, at least temporarily. And they called three or four towns and they said, you know, no way. But somewhere along the way, they got a hold of Ismay and it's 21 people. And Ismay said, sure. And so Ismay decided to change his name to Joe. And so we have a little community named Joe Montana. And so I said, you know what, we'll have Joe Montana be the greatest athlete associated with Joe Montana or Ismay. And, you know, funny side story to that, there still is in the community hall that he basically helped to build down there. It still says Joe Montan on it. I think the wind blew an A off of it. But Joe was actually invited to Ismay, and he really had no interest in going, and so he didn't. And so they invited the in town to come back, and as I understand it, Joe Montana wasn't all that excited about that prospect either. But he did meet with that town, 20 of the 21 people, and had a wonderful time.
I think he was just a little bit embarrassed by it, Joe Montana. We're talking with Jeff Welsh, author of Montana Greats from A to Z. That's Obzorki to Zurich, the greatest athletes from 264 Montana communities. That's from Riverbend Publishing. Let's see. You've got an event. I want to get that out there, too. You're going to have an event. You're doing some signings. I'm sure that's a lot of fun. People come in and just, hey, you forgot about this guy, or yeah. You're right about this, but wrong about that sort of thing. But talk about this event you have today in Helena.
Yeah, this evening I'll be in Helena at the Montana Book Company at 6:15, and should be kind of fun because I'm sharing the stage with Brian D'Ambrosio, who's written a number of books. He's a Helena resident, and a couple of those are sports books. But this one is Montana Murders. So we have Montana Greats and Montana Murders. So the owners of the bookstore said this could be kind of fun because we've got the opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be there from 6:15. We'll talk a little bit about our books and sign some books.
Did you indeed stop for a beverage in every town?
That would prove impossible at this point.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Montana is so big, and, you know, anybody could spend a lifetime plus exploring.
Wait a minute. I just heard somebody out there go, no, it's not impossible. I'm embarking on that right now, as a matter of fact. There are people out there who probably go, I can do that, you know.
It is my goal, and, you know, I would say that my wife and I have been in nearly every town. We're still missing a small piece of the northeastern corner of the state. I'm hoping to put together a little caravan out there this summer, actually, maybe even and bring some books with me and talk about it. Because northeastern Montana, if you understand especially the basketball history of some of those small towns, many of which their high schools have boarded up or burned down or just don't exist anymore. They're just standing relics. They were a class – those schools were Class C powerhouses back in the day, Flaxville, Outlook, Peerless. And so that's actually been one of the gratifying components of producing this book is people in those communities are getting to relive a time in their histories that were actually great moments for them, very nostalgic.
Got just a few seconds here. I guess I'll tell you what. I want to tease some things coming up here. I want to get some stories out there, some stories from northeastern Montana, because that's where my family origins are. Robin Selvig, I've known that. Just a great coach, a great gentleman. Interested to hear about that story, being the first non-Indian inducted into the Indian Athletic Hall of Fame.
Right.
And you know, just being a great athlete himself, but he's from that area. And then we'll talk about, you know, who put their town on the map, what story impacted perhaps you the most, or the feedback that you're getting on this book. It is Jeff Welsh, author of Montana Greats. Here, it's From Montana for Montana. Tom Schultz alongside Voices of Montana. Welcome back. You know how I always say, and everybody in Montana says, that we're just one large, small community statewide, and that's how we feel. And this is what I think is proven in this book, too, Montana Greats. Jeff Welsh, the author of it, in studio here today. You look at Hall, Montana. There's not too much there anymore, but there was a kid named Jess Martin, who was the so-called great from the town. That's always up for debate. I don't know. Great Falls, Montana, and we're heard there, of course, on KQDI. Dave Dickinson, and I covered Dave, the legend of the fall. I'm not sure you're going to get a ton of argument over that, Gray Cliff. I'm just in the G's. Ronnie Halverson, Fromberg, Deb Greeno. This is just really fun to look at these names. You know, there had to be, Jeff, 100 different ways you could write this book. But you just went from A to Z in these small communities, and you're not I don't want to put it that way, but you're not preaching to the choir. You're not getting philosophical about it. You're just talking about these athletes, and so sometimes they're significant in the significance in the town or the significance in the sport. But it's just A to Z, just like you say.
Well, that's right, and you know, and part of the thinking here was that we'd get a great discussion going, you know, on bar stools around the state about, you know, who's the best athlete in a certain town and, you know, who else should it be? And I actually anticipated that there would be a lot of pushback on a lot of these. And the interesting thing is, no, that hasn't been the case. In some cases, of course, there are people who say, well, I would have put so-and-so, but you can certainly make a great argument for the person you have. And so I'm literally getting no pushback on who I've picked in any of these communities. I'll tell you where I'm getting the pushback, and this surprised me a little bit, but I find it fascinating, is that there are communities that want to claim somebody who I have somewhere else. And a couple of examples of that stand out, Chinook. Now, you know, recently passing away was Mike Tilleman, the great football player, who, you know, family really connected to the High Line, owned a car dealership in Haver. That's where he'd lived. Went to Chinook High School, set all kinds of records. And so, you know, the backstory on this is that this first appeared in our newspapers and online in a six-part series that ran six consecutive weeks. And so the first was A to C, and Chinook is in the C, obviously. And so that comes out, and I have a wrestler named Ben Stroh for Chinook. And I get an email from this fellow up there. He says, look, Ben Stroh, great athlete. But how in the world did you not have Mike Tilleman as our greatest athlete? Were you drunk when you did this? And I said, you know what? Just be patient. Mike Tilleman is represented in this book. He said, Mike Tilleman is from Chinook. He should be in Chinook. You're wrong about this. And so I carried this further with him. I said, okay, you know, spoiler alert, but Mike Tilleman is in here and he's literally saved to the very end, right? He is his family. He grew up around Zurich. And he still argues with me about this. He said, no, I was a classmate. He's from Chinook. And so a day later, I get another email from him, and he says, basically a mea culpa. He says, oh, my gosh, I've lived here all my life, and I had no idea. But you're right. I talked to some classmates, and he actually grew up around Zurich. And so, but Chinook wanted to claim him, even though Ben Stroh is a great athlete. The other story that was even a little – people had a little bit more sensitivity to was Glasgow. Now, I have – a remarkable story, I think, is Steve Reeves, probably the greatest bodybuilder in world history, and a fellow competitor who was pretty good himself, called him the greatest, most sculpted body that God ever created, right?
Yeah.
So, again, this isn't necessarily technically a sport, but Steve Reeves, who is from Glasgow and whose family's from all around Montana, has family around Lewistown, ends up going to Hollywood. He ends up winning all these Mr. Olympia, Mr. America, the whole works. Ends up going into movies, becomes the Hercules of you know, those of us who are old enough to remember, right?
Yeah.
Turns down some roles, that one in particular that Clint Eastwood took. He's from Glasgow. But people in Glasgow really wanted their guy to be a fellow named Roy Robinson, who is probably, he was a Grizz, probably one of the four or five greatest athletes of all time in Montana. And so for a long time, I had this real difficult decision between these two guys. Well, as fortune would have it, during one of my conversations of the many I had to produce this book, somebody says, you know, Roy Robinson, his family actually lived in St. Mary. His father was an Air Force sergeant. problem solved.
Yeah,
right there.
Right, yeah.
But Glasgow still wants Roy Robinson because he's got all these records that he set in high school there.
Well, and I read that one too. I was interested in that because I was just recently up at St. Mary's, and there is a community there still. And,
yes.
A lot of these towns, they still have a few people here and there. You know, that leads to the question about what is the magic behind how we connect with our athletes from our communities. I'm going to take a break and come on back. And then I'm going to ask that one, too, about who put their town on the map, so to speak. So Jeff Welsh is with us, author of Montana Greats, from A, Absorkey to Z, Zurich, the greatest athletes from 264 Montana communities, from Riverbend Publishing. Brock Warren from Rosebud, Shane Collins from Roundup, Marvin Camel in boxing from Ronan. Yeah, you can tell I'm in the R's right now. A to Z, it's Jeff Welsh with us in studio, author of Montana Greats, the greatest athletes from 264 Montana communities. Jeff, appreciate you being in studio. Who put their town on the map?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, several names come to mind. And I think you mentioned earlier Robin Selvig of Outlook, northeastern Montana. You know, the Selvig family is a powerful name up there, and they had some great basketball teams at a time when the population up there was greater than it was. They played at a higher level. But, you know, Robin, coming from this tiny little place in northeastern Montana, you know, and he had an outstanding college playing career. But what he did as a coach with the Lady Grizz and some of the boundaries that he crossed, the barriers that he smashed. You talked about this too, recruiting, you know, some of our Native Americans and some of those players being in this book as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody outside of northeastern Montana had really heard of Outlook or would know about Outlook if it weren't for Robin Selvig. But I think there are some other examples. Shoto, you know, probably the greatest rodeo clown in history, Flint Rasmussen.
You got a great picture of him in here, by the way.
Yeah.
Of Flint, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a case where there was some dispute. You know, there's a great football MSU football player from there named Mike Fellows, and some people thought that's who it should have been because he's a true athlete, arguing that a rodeo clown is not an athlete. Well, Flint was a pretty good athlete in high school, but here again, the it factor comes in, and I would argue that you've got to be a pretty good athlete to be a rodeo clown. You know, when you're chasing bulls around the arena, just like I would argue that, you know, there's a to the bodybuilding piece. There's an athleticism there, or cheerleading. I don't have a cheerleader in here, but nevertheless, I would argue he's a great athlete. But I think Flint, you know, puts Shoto on the map. You know, I think Larry Krystowiak, the great ex-Grizz basketball player, mm-hmm. and Shelby, which Shelby has a wonderful sports history. I think a lot of people are aware of the Dempsey fight, you know, from almost a century ago, you know, the ill-fated Dempsey fight. But, you know, and Larry Krystowiak, I mean, Shelby is mighty, mighty proud to claim him. And I'm not sure how many people would know of Shelby, Montana, if it weren't for Larry Krystowiak.
There's a lot of families in here too, Jeff. You know, like I'm looking at Custer. You can just peel through here, and I like it being alphabetical because it puts things in order for us. We can find it easy. You know, the Kellers, but you've got the Bignells. You talked about the Selvigs, and then when you're we got a minute and a half here. Talk about the family relations and how interesting that is that you see them spread out across Montana.
Well, they are. Another one is Wyszynski, where they've some kids who just came out of Baker and are competing in a college in North Dakota. That's a big one. Maybe the one that jumps out the most is Schillinger.
Yeah.
Because of the connection, you know, the Grizz now, the great coach in Baker, the football coach in Baker. And yet, you know, my great for Vita is Lisa Lockhart, who is the great barrel racer. She's a Schillinger, right?
Yeah.
Who also happens to be related to Jess Lockwood, the bull rider from Volberg, speaking of putting a community on the map. And so, yes, there are names that, you know, Schillinger's in, or I'm sorry, Wyszynski's in Reigate. But it's clear that people have, their families have spread out across the state.
Got to take a break upcoming here, so I'm going to set the table for the other side of this. Jeff Welsh is with us, author of Montana Greats, From A to Z, the greatest athletes, 260. That's a long title, by the way. Can I just call it Montana Greats? Is that
that's,
all right?
That's what we do in headlines.
Yeah, right. I want to get philosophical about this. Athletes, they compete for pride and their team and their town. But today, there's so much money surrounding college and professional sports. So the question is, how do we keep the innocence in athletics? We'll come on back with more. It is from Montana, for Montana. Tom Schultz alongside Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
You're listening to a podcast from the live Voices of Montana radio show. Be sure to check out the full podcast page at voicesofmontana.com for a full listing of all our programs. We've been covering Montana issues for more than 20 years. Thanks for listening today.
You know, you can call us here if you want. I don't get the phone number out a lot, but there it was, 866-627-5483. Got a text message here, and that's 781-627-5483. It simply says, Alan Nielsen, Westby.
Yeah,
Jeff Welch is with us, author of Montana Greats, as we're talking about the greatest athletes from 264 communities. I want to throw a few out here just to mention them. Jen Walker from Ballantyne, Bear Creek. This one kind of struck me. Mike and John Barrowitch. You've got some family, some brothers connected here, too. He is so-called the inventor of the hook shot. Butte America's got Sonny Holland in there. People know an awful lot about him. Kayla Lambert from Brockton. Just really fun reading. And it's more history than really it is athletics, isn't it?
Yeah, I really do think of it more of a history book, because I get into the significance of a lot of these athletes and what they did for their sport. You mentioned Barrowitch and the hook shot. A lot of people claim the invention of the hook shot. You know, Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and there was supposedly a guy at Oregon State who taught him that. But Barrowitch, you're going back to the 30s. And, you know, those brothers, the father died in the famous Smith Mine accident there. And both of them went on to some distinguished careers in Billings and actually became terrific golfers.
Into their old age.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, that was back when Bear Creek was a powerhouse in so many sports. And, you know, really symbolic of what's happened to a lot of Montana with some of the population drain in the rural parts of the state. And again, we saw that in northeastern Montana with Outlook and Flaxville and Peerless, and there's Hoagland and Moccasin and Oilmont, all these places that at one time had a high school and don't anymore. And interesting that you get a text about Alan Nielsen, because a piece of this for me, too, is some of the tragedies that some of our athletes have been through in their families. And Alan Nielsen was a great Grizz basketball player who was tragically killed while working on a road crew west of Missoula in the summer after he graduated. And he was married at the time. And I got a really nice note when this first came out from his widow, Vicky, about how seeing his name and his accomplishments again really brought something back to her and the family. And she was able to talk to her kids about this.
That's a really cool story.
It was really touching, yeah. Touching for me. And there are other cases of tragedies. And, you know, I think the most tragic story in Montana history, and actually it still chokes me up sometimes when I talk about it, is Wayne Estes, the great athlete, the basketball player from Montana. A lot of myths about Wayne, but, you know, the upshot is he died after setting a school record at Utah State for points in a season on a magical, magical night. And, he and some friends came upon a car accident after that game. And a lot of people think the myth is that he and his teammates stopped to help and that he grabbed a power line and was electrocuted. Well, that part is true. He did. But the true story is that the guys left so to go back to an apartment so that the point guard on the team could change into more comfortable shoes, tennis shoes. And so they decided they were coming back. They were going to a pizza joint. And when they returned, the whole place was cleaned up. And so they parked the car and they start walking down the sidewalk. And there's one remnant that hasn't been cleaned up. There's a sagging power line that is 6 feet 4 inches above the ground. Wayne Estes is 6'5", The point guard goes first, and he's 6'2". He realizes that this thing is going to hit Wayne too late. He yells his name. It's too late. Wayne grabs the power line. He's instantly killed. The point guard was sent flying across the street. That's how powerful this was. And was told later that if he hadn't been wearing tennis shoes, if he'd been wearing his dress shoes, he might have died. It's an incredibly sad story. And a sidebar to this, in doing some of the research I did in writing a magazine story for Montana Quarterly about Wayne, is most people assume that he was to be married to a woman named Judy Morstein, who would later become Montana's governor, Judy Martz, a great speed skater, Olympic speed skater, right, from Anaconda. And they were very, very close friends, and a lot of people in town assume that. But the truth of the story is he had a girlfriend from college at Utah State named Paula. And this is a made-for-movie type story, in fact. They were engaged and unengaged 13 times. He had a wedding ring for her. And the reason they got unengaged was she was Mormon. He was, I believe, Episcopalian. And if they married, his mom and dad could not be in the church. And he could not do that to them. And so she was so distraught. This whole thing was so emotionally difficult for her that she actually transfers from Utah State to BYU. Well, the end of the story is that the night before this game where he set all the records, they're in Provo, and after the game he goes to her and he says, I've made up my mind. You are who I want to spend the rest of my life with. We'll figure this out with my parents, so on and so forth. They get engaged one more time, and this is the final deal.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, he goes up, he sets this record, and, you know, he said his Paula told me later that he told her immediately after the game, he called her, he said, I could not feel my arms. And his first couple shots were air balls. And he says to the coach, Liddell Anderson, I need to come out of the game. I can't feel my arms. And Liddell Anderson told me this story. He said, you stay out there. You'll be fine. And he stays out there. Everything starts going in, but he still can't feel his arms. And so he calls Paula after the game. He said, you know, somebody else was putting that ball in the basket for me. It wasn't me. There was some higher power thing going on here. And incredibly, you know, and within an hour, he's gone. And it's just an incredibly, incredibly sad story. And his, you know, Paula went on to have a very challenging life and is now kind of got her legs under her down in Sedona, Arizona. He was to be drafted in the first round of the NBA draft by the LA Lakers, who ultimately did draft him posthumously.
Oh wow!
But
I didn't know that.
Yes, and you know, I've done a couple of stories, and I've been to Anaconda, and that town is grieving over many things. The loss of the smelter obviously was a huge hit, like Butte when they lost the mines when Anaconda pulled out. But I still think that town grieves over Wayne Estes. I don't think that they've recovered. And I think I interviewed a dozen people for that story. Every single one of them cried.
Wow. And that's a lot of years past, too.
It's a lot of years past. One of them was his brother. I mean, obviously, Ronnie, it still impacts him. Liddell Anderson, the coach, who was living in St. George, Utah, he broke down on the phone. Who knows what would have become.
I've got a sense of appreciation, Jeff, for what you did here and hearing you tell that story in all the research, because this could have been one of those things that somebody could have called in and just talked to one or two people from town and then said, oh, well, just this is good. I got enough of a story. My job here is done. Let's move on. But you took it to heart, didn't you?
Well, it really was a labor of love. And as I said earlier, it's still a work in progress. I'm eager for the next edition. I've already got a 265th town.
What town's that?
It's spoiler alert, it's Silver Bow.
Okay, all right.
A great Paralympian is from there. That in all of the research for this, I came across her name, but it wasn't until I was actually on a radio show in Butte about a month ago where they said, well, you know, she's known to be from Butte, but Aaron Popovich is actually from Silver Bow. But, you know, you make a great point in that I started down this path and I would turn over a rock, whether in newspaper archives, magazine archives, talking with community icons, institutional knowledge people, I'd turn over a rock and there would be three more rocks to turn over. And I'd turn those over and there would be three more rocks after that. And it was gratifying, but I remember thinking to myself, you know, this could go on forever.
Yeah.
And at some point, I've got to stop and produce a book. But one thing I do in here is, at the very beginning, I have my email address is in here for people to write to me to say, here's one of these small towns where the kid actually went to high school over here, but here's the ranch town he grew up in. But also to update where people are, or as you can imagine, sometimes even factual information was a challenge. And so, you know, if there's updates on what people accomplished, you know, I'm completely open to that because this is a work in progress. I want to make this as comprehensive as possible. And if I can get this over 300 Montana towns, I'll be thrilled.
Yeah. It might take 100 years to do that. But
I hope I live a lot longer.
We'll take a break. Jeff Welch with us, author of Montana Greats here, executive sports editor for 406mtsports.com. Also, this is his sixth book. One of those you might recognize is Back Roads and Byways of Montana. This Montana Greats is sort of an offshoot of that. We'll come on back, and I'll get a little philosophical about sports and small towns. It's From Montana, For Montana, Voices of Montana. It's been a fun hour. Tomorrow we are live at the Montana State Elks Convention. Got a good lineup there. I don't have it pulled up at the moment. I tried, but my computer's a little bit slow, or perhaps it's me being a little bit slow. Tom Schultz is back here with Jeff Welch, author of Montana Greats, and I can't help but think about, you know, athletes. Some athletes are born great with great talent. Others have to develop it through challenges in their lives. And there are a lot of great athletes out there, Jeff. I think as many miles as you've passed and saw and accounted for great athletes, there were, through a lot of circumstances, great athletes who never really got to their full potential. I don't know how you cover that, but if you have a comment on that, I just think about the people, for whatever reason it is, never reached that kind of level.
Yeah, boy, maybe you're talking to one.
maybe that comes from one. Yeah.
Of course, you know, I just always tell people, well, if it weren't for the bad knee, but that's embellished.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I look back on it, and I think now so much of becoming a great athlete, obviously there are gifts that you're given, but it really does come down to work and commitment and confidence, I think, is a big part of that, too. I lacked confidence, and I think I was a very good high school baseball player. I should have been better, and I think that's a big part of it. It does sort of lead me into something we talked about off the air, though, and that's becoming a great athlete. And some you talked about AAU and some of these other, you know, I really struggle these days with the proliferation of club teams and single sport focus. I go back to probably our childhood when we spent all our time in the sandlots.
Yeah,
and I think we have lost a lot with that. And I think these traveling teams that are so prolific anymore, I don't care if it's soccer, baseball, basketball, you name it, are not so much about the kids. They're more about the parents.
That's the question I want to get to, too. And I appreciate that because, you know, athletes, athleticism, we used to compete for pride and our teams and our towns and personal achievement and getting over these challenges. Now there's a lot of organization. There's so much money involved in it. The question is, how do we keep the innocence? And so we used to be laying it on the line for our town or our pride or our school, and now we do it for Coca-Cola or GMC. I think we've lost something. How do we maintain our innocence?
Well, I think the traveling team thing is a big part of that. And even in some of the most the places in Montana, for instance, that have still retained some semblance of that innocence. And I think of a lot of the small towns in eastern Montana where the school is still the centerpiece and there still is that great pride. And yet a lot of these athletes are ending up on traveling teams because that's the only way they feel like they can get to where they want to go. I actually think that the whole innocence thing is probably a lost cause.
It's not so.
I'm sorry, but we've changed the landscape so much. And You know, I really believe it probably began with the proliferation of the 24/7 news cycles and the TV networks that are constantly, you know, for instance, you know, kidnappings and crime and things like that. And I think in the 80s and 90s, when we saw this day after day after day, parents became afraid. And so they started not letting their kids go out and do their thing on their bikes and their rock climbing and their sand lots and so forth. And now everybody's, you know, on managed teams. And I just don't think we're going to get it back. And, you know, and I honestly believe that in many respects, sometimes our athletes do get better that way. But I think you'll see a lot of today's great athletes tell you the best thing you can do is compete in as many sports as you can. And the other thing is, you know, if you think about it, when you're on a even a Little League baseball team, you might get 15 swings in a practice. If you go up to the sandlot, you're going to take 200,
yeah,
which is going to help you become a better hitter.
Yeah, and you're going to swing at some bad balls, too, for that matter.
You're going to learn the difference. Yeah, That's right. And so, but I do think we've lost something. But I will say this. Eastern Montana is different from Western Montana. I'm not telling your listeners anything they don't already know. But it's pretty striking. And I've actually come to appreciate it through Backroads and Byways of Montana. And now Montana greats. The nuance in eastern Montana is something special. But those towns still have a lot of that innocence.
Have appreciated the conversation. Jeff Welsh, Montana greats. That's from River Bend Publishing. I like how you're supporting the independent bookstores. You're in Helena today, 6:15 tonight, I should say, at Montana Book Company. Again, go to River Bend Publishing for more on that. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate this. Good book.
It really was the fastest hour in radio. Thanks so much.
Yeah. And the Elks Convention tomorrow. We're live there. Until then, you guys have a good one. We'll see you then.